Et Naim, Nikki Yasam Hilo, Nikki Machuptamaidu. Hello, everyone. My name is Hilo, and I'm Machuptamaidu. We acknowledge and are mindful that Chico State stands on lands that were originally occupied by the first people of this area, the Machupta, and we recognize their distinctive spiritual relationship with this land and the waters that run through campus. We are humbled that our campus resides upon sacred lands that have sustained the Machupta people for centuries and continue to do so today.
Okay, we are recording. Welcome to another episode of First Generation, One of Many, where our mission is to create an archive of discussions with and about first generation student experiences in and out of the classroom. We hope to continue raising awareness, understanding, provide voice for students and alum, as well as present resources for faculty, staff, and students working for and collaborating with first generation students. All right, this is episode number 2 with me flying solo for a while. And our guests today are from Chico State's Cross-Cultural Leadership Center, or the CCLC, which has been around campus for about 11 years now. And we're going to hear some great things about their journey through education into higher education and what they're doing now and how they're impacting it and how they're also impacted by higher education themselves. So we'll get right into our quote, which really speaks to some of the great things that the CCLC is doing. And this comes from Miriam Ben-Salam, who refers herself as a medium who writes about philosophy, psychology, neuroplasticity, and epigenetics. You deserve freedom. You owe it to yourself. You are anything but selfish whenever you decide to stand up for yourself. All right, and our first guest today is Yamile Bayi. Yamile is a first-generation low-income student and the daughter of a farm worker. She holds 2 master's degrees, one from Stanislaus State in English Lit and another from San Diego State in Educational Counseling. Her passion is student success and student equity, especially for first-gen underrepresented students. She has a wonderful partner named Rob and a cat named Sir Bigs-a-Lot. Well, hello, Yamile. Welcome.
Hey there, Josh. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, I'm glad when we got all these things worked out and the details to get you involved that you just jumped right in and were so patient for me to help get this scheduled, but also excited to do this.
Oh, yeah. I've wanted to do a podcast forever, so this is like low-key a dream come true.
Oh, well, yeah. Great. All right. Well, then, that's wonderful. Cool. You have to share it with your family and friends.
Yeah, for sure.
You're done. Great, yeah. Great. Yeah, because we were talking a little beforehand, like our relationship, at least meeting each other, has gone back about 10 years ago. We were able to be part of the Chico State Summer Institute on Diversity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was a great experience. And then just sort of, unfortunately, with the way different offices and programs are set up, we didn't get to cross paths a whole lot.
Yeah, no.
Until 2 years ago when you moved over to the CCLC, really, we got to kind of at least see each other more frequently. So,
yeah.
All right. I'm excited to learn more about you.
Sure. Well, I should say that I'm here in lieu of our very beloved director, Crystal Tonga. She wasn't able to make it today. So I just wanted to give a shout out to you, Crystal. We miss you. Wish you were here. So the CCLC has been around for about 15 years. And I think we're about 15. We're going into our 15th anniversary. And I've been at the CCLC, I think, about almost 2.5 years. So I'm relatively new to the office and the kind of work that they do. But it's really exciting. It's really creative. It's really transformative kinds of work. So I feel really privileged and lucky to be here. But just to give you some background and my journey, my story through higher education, like I mentioned in my bio, my dad was a farm worker, right? So he like harvested sugar beets and made hay bales most of his life that I can remember. So That was kind of really kind of formative to my life. My mother was a teacher in Mexico, actually, but she passed away when I was 6 years old. So I don't really have a lot of memories of her or knew her personally in the way that you would know a parent, really. But I did know a few things about her. I knew that she was an educated woman. I knew that we actually had a copy of her college degree. And in Mexico, there are these really large, ornate, beautiful documents. And it was, you know, in our house. And so I had that connection to higher education through my mother, even though it wasn't something that I experienced directly, it was still something that was part of my life. And honestly, that was a huge motivator for me. Like, understanding that this is who she was made me feel like I wanted to be like her. I couldn't know her. I couldn't talk with her, but I could at least try to be like her a little bit. And that really kind of like made my journey into higher education what it was. And it was a lot harder in Mexico to get an education. We didn't have kind of the resources, the, you know, financial aid access, the things that we have here in the United States. So for her to accomplish that in the 50s and 60s was really something, because her mother, my grandmother, was, you know, a washerwoman. She washed people's clothes and cleaned their houses in order to sustain her family. And my mother's father actually had passed away when she was young too. So like, it's just that story just kind of really motivated me, and I had something to aspire to. And I think that was really important. I also really loved to read. I loved books. And I think when you grow up, as I did, you know, I grew up with my dad. We moved to California when I was 6, right after my mother passed away. And so, you know, I wanted something different. There was a lot of trauma growing up, that losing your mom when you're that young was very traumatic, but you just don't realize that as a kid, because you don't have any concept for grief. You don't understand. And we really didn't talk about it in my house. So it was sort of a very traumatic beginning, and with no processing. And so, and then just my family, you know, there's a lot of dysfunction as well. So how does a kid survive that? How do you overcome that? How do you still keep going in the light of all these things? And for me, it was really books. Books are the things that gave me a vision for something else. Like, there's a different world. I could go live with Laura Ingalls in the prairies of South Dakota, you know, or... I could be out in London with the little princess, or I could, you know, just be in different places than the place that I was. And it gave me an idea that was somewhere else that I could be, another world to inhabit. And so it made me see something beyond me. And that's why I kind of studied literature for my whole life, because those stories were so life-giving and so future-casting that I just wanted to be in that world forever. Let's see, I started working in a bookstore, which is probably, you would maybe expect that when I was in graduate school, because I love books. I love being around books. But then I realized once I graduated college with a degree in English, I'm like, well, I certainly don't want to teach, because those high schoolers are going to make me cry within the first week. So I'm not that tough. I'm a softie, and I know I'm a softie. And so I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to make it in high school. So I just stayed and I got a master's degree in English. I thought maybe I'd like to be a scholar, because at that point, the idea of scholarship was really attractive to me. And as I say that, you can probably tell I'm a super huge nerd, right? Like, for a Latino woman, like, I'm totally into this world of books and study and libraries, all about it. So I did that, but I realized a scholarship is a very small world. I decided to focus on 19th century British women's literature, specifically poetry, specifically the poetry of Christina Rossetti and Elizabeth Barrett Browning. So wow. You want to be obscure, nice. You know, that's not terribly obscure, but yeah, but it's a small community, and not very, everyone's interested in it. And I realized I wanted to make an impact, and I wanted to affect people's lives, and not just spend a lot of time in the library among the stacks, even though I'm sort of happy there. So I started working for Migrant Education after I left the bookstore. Migrant Ed was really important to me. I was a counselor / tutor with them. So I worked with migrant students in high schools. From there, I went on to work for UC Merced. I started as administrative assistant. I was the worst administrative assistant ever. I did not enjoy that. And they didn't enjoy me, I don't think, either. From there, I went on to their EOPS program, which is similar to the CSU EOP program. And so I did outreach. And really, I went to a conference through EOPS at UC Merced. that talked about the equity gap. And that really helped me understand that the achievement levels are, there's a huge disparity with our students of color and other students in terms of what they can achieve and what people believe that they can achieve. And I remember very clearly the speaker said that sometimes teachers don't believe students of color can learn. And that really got me. Like, that seemed, as someone who loved school, who saw school as a safe space, who prospered in schools, to see that some teachers aren't on your side seemed like such a betrayal to me, because I know in a lot of our families, like, our teachers are really exalted and well thought of, and you trust them, but not every teacher believes your student can learn. And that to me seemed really scary, really sad, but I wanted to be one of the voices that were telling students who were like me, that you can do it, that you can accomplish what you want to accomplish. And then let me show you how. And so really that equity work really started for me with UC Merced. As I got into I moved from Merced just because I wanted to be somewhere different. I applied to a lot of CSUs, and Chico was the one that accepted me. So here I am. I worked in admissions for about 8 years. And that was my point, to go into these communities where maybe schools don't normally go into and say, you can go to college. There are opportunities here at CSU Chico. Here's how you do it. Let me help you. Then I came, I've done that for 8 years. So as you can imagine, I was probably like reciting things from memory. So I wanted to do something different. I came here to the CCLC as a program coordinator. And like I said earlier, it's a really fulfilling, creative, dynamic place to work where our students take the leap. And I'm saying that, I've said so much, maybe I should turn it over to them.
Hey, I know, I was just kind of like here mesmerized, just listening to learning about what you've done, the journey, all the things. And because of all of our talking, I think I only probably had heard you share or talk about maybe one or two of those things. So that's what's wonderful about this. But I was just kind of like, okay.
Yeah. So, I just finished my second master's. Yeah, I should mention that. I just finished my second master's in counseling education because of this job. I wanted to be able to serve students better. So, yeah.
Great. Excellent. I think that seems to be a common theme with a number of people. Once you work on campus long enough and you see what you're doing and you realize like, oh, well, there is this other sort of formalized education that I could go do to improve some of my skills, my knowledge, and my network of people that I'm working with. And so that is good. Yeah. So that's great to hear about, that you did that then.
Yeah. I was, like I said, it is really about serving students and being the best that you can be for others. And that's really what I love about the job, is that the students are at the forefront. You don't have to, it's not about you or your ego. It's about how can you help others be successful. And that's the whole point for me, for what I do. Like, I don't need to be the star. I don't need to be front and center. As long as I feel that I'm helping you a little bit to be successful, reach your goals, I'm happy.
Okay. And like you said, with that being said, we're going to move to someone else. Oh, no, I love it. Thank you so much for sharing that. Because I know for you also, it's not something that you are always openly doing and sharing out there. So it's great that you feel comfortable to do that here in this venue. I appreciate it. Okay. And so now, let's see. Anna. Anna, you're up. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. And here, the funny part is because in my life, I have two different people in my life who spell their name that way, and that I'm related with through marriage now. And one of them goes by Anna and one goes by Anna. So so that's why I get it confused sometimes. But yes, Anna, that's you, yeah. Anna Marquez. Can you share with us a little bit about you, what your journey was into higher education, or what it's like once that you're here now?
Yeah. So first of all, Amanda, thank you for sharing. I think everything you said was beautiful and inspiring, and I always enjoy hearing what you have to share about your life. But hello, everyone. I'm Anna Marquez. I am a fourth-year psychology student, and I'm minoring in criminal justice. And I'm a paraprofessional here at the Cross Cultural Leadership Center. And so just a little bit about myself. I'm from El Centro, California. It's in the Imperial Valley. And we're across the border from Mexicali. So we're all the way down south, about 14 hours away from Chico. So it's pretty far. And I'm a transfer student. So I transferred last year from Imperial Valley College. And yeah, I went to community college for 2 years and I transferred. I honestly, high school was really hard for me and community college was really hard for me. My freshman year, I did not do so well. I worked really hard to pick up my GPA. I mean, I did back-to-back semesters and I did winter and summer. I did 19 units. And while working part-time, trying to support me, you know, my vision, trying to save money, because I knew that I was going to have to save money for me to move up wherever I went, because I wasn't sure where I was going to be accepted. And again, because of my GPA and because, you know, I wasn't really sure where I was going. You know, I just knew that my parents wanted me to go to school, and I knew that I wanted to do something. I wanted to give back to communities, and the only way I could do that, honestly, the way I could see it was going to school. So I got accepted to 2 CSUs and I chose Chico State and I'm glad I'm here. So yeah, just, I'm thankful. I was just talking about this the other day to some students who came into the CCLC, and I was just saying, like, you know, I wasn't really into college and then I came to Chico State and like now I'm really into college. I joined CAVE. I did an AS Diversity Council. I joined a multicultural sorority. I'm at the CCLC and I'm facilitating programs and events, and it's just so crazy like how life works out. And you know, like, I didn't see this vision for me, but you know, thankfully I had people in my life who did. You know, my mom, my parents, you know, being a first gen student, my mom had me when she was 18, so for her, like, this was her vision for me, like, you know. And at this point it's like, this is what I want to do, and I didn't see it, and then I'm just like, I'm glad that I'm here. You know, I'm thankful that people in my life are pushing me to come to school and to find those resources. Even though I did not know what I was doing, whenever I would fill out FAFSA applications, I was completely lost. And, you know, I'm thankful that I'm here. And I'm thankful that I get to be that resource for students, because there are students who come into the center and who, you know, they're freshmen or they're sophomores. And especially right now, because this is the first time on campus, you know, it's okay to be kind of confused and okay to be, you know, where do I go? How do I find my community in Chico State? Because, you know, there's a lot of students who are from SoCal, or where Chico is is not a diverse place. So it's a big culture shock. And I'm just grateful that I'm here to give to students and be able for them to be a resource. I just want to be a resource, because I know that college is hard to navigate. And yeah, I mean, that's just a little bit of myself.
That's great. Thank you for sharing. I think your passion comes across very much of how excited you are about what you're doing. And it sounds like you don't have any time almost for yourself, because you went from, you said, from almost doing nothing in college, like, I'm here, whatever, to now your day must just be filled with a schedule of activities and events and programs and works. I mean, and then you have to fit in your own study time. So
yeah, and I mean, like, don't get me wrong, like, when I was in high school, I was also really involved in like ASB and those types of things, but I wasn't like motivated to do it in college. Like, I wasn't sure, because I was going to community college. Like, everybody looks at community college as a thing, like, oh, you're there because you don't know what you're doing, or because you're just there, you know. And a lot of people have this like idea that when you go to community college, like, you're just gonna stay there. So I wanted to prove everybody wrong. I wanted to do, like I said, like, I knew that the work that I wanted to do, I needed to get my bachelor's, and you know, eventually I want to go for my master's in social work. But yeah, I needed a little push, and that's what I mean. Like, I'm thankful for the resources around me. I'm thankful for mentors that I've had in my life. I'm thankful for, most importantly, my family, who they knew that I could do it. So yeah.
That's great. Yeah. One of my passions has been working with students who are on academic probation. Mm-hmm. Most of the time I've been working in higher education, and a lot of them hopefully can resonate if they hear this with what you're talking about. Not that you were on, don't get me wrong, people. I'm not saying that Anna was on academic probation, but her mindset about like, I'm just kind of like, whatever, it's just here. I don't know what I'm really doing.
Yeah.
That is one thing that a lot of students who end up on academic probation is their mindset. And then they meet someone or they meet a few people or something just resonates all of a sudden and they become, you know, just exemplary students as far as just their approach, their study, their willingness to ask for help, all those different things. So I'm glad you shared that because that may resonate with we have a number of people, obviously, you know, in higher education who are struggling for whatever reason it may be.
And just to be completely honest, I was going through a lot with my academics, and I had seen a counselor in my community college, and she's like, just completely honest, I don't think you're going to be able to transfer this year. And it was my sophomore year. It was my second year.
Right.
And I was like, what do you mean? Like, this is my plan. And she's like, well, you haven't been doing good. Like, I don't see how you can get. I'm being completely honest. This is what she said. And I was like, oh, I went home and I was crying. I was telling my mom. I was like, I can't believe she said that. Like, this is my plan, you know? And I'm grateful that I did it. And I'm glad, I'm proud of myself. But sometimes I think that, you know, I was going through a lot. I'm the oldest child. So I had to help my mom with a lot of things with my siblings, and I had a lot going on. I was working, and sometimes I think like these things can hold us back, or they can also inspire us to say, you know what, I want a better job, I want a better future for myself. So you can, if you're listening and you know you're dealing with these things and you're like, I am on academic probation, or I'm going through something, use it as inspiration. I know it's easier to say than done, but use it as inspiration to move forward and in your college career, whether it's college or trade school or, but, you know, if you're at Chico State, just keep pushing forward if you're going through things, because that could be your motivation to just keep going.
And I'll have to add in there, if you're at any school,
and you're
pursuing higher education, because we have listeners across the nation now, and we have this podcast has been shared out with about at least 200 different reps from 200 different campuses around the country. I've heard from a few people who now are sharing it with their high school classes to have students listen to it because it connects to certain things they're going through as students. And so if you're at all just trying, even if you're not education, pursuing some sort of goal or plan that you may have, and you come into a roadblock or a stumble or whatever, how can you help yourself keep moving forward? Who can help you move forward? But definitely keep that going. Thank you for sharing, Anna. All right, Nitty, you're up. If we can hear a little bit about your journey in education now.
Of course. So hello, my name is Nitty Bhutani. Thank you for having me on this podcast. Thank you both Anna and Yamile for sharing. Your stories are beautiful and inspiring. I really appreciate it. And I'm sure all the listeners appreciate it as well. So I was born in Chandigarh, India. And that was in 1997, and my dad was already working in America, and so it was just me, my mom, and my sister in India, and it wasn't the best environment that, because she was living with my dad's family, and that was not the best environment to raise children in, and then eventually my dad was able to bring me, my sister, and my mom over to America. So I was 2 years old, and we moved to Sacramento. And, you know, from the start, there was, I mean, I grew up, like, bilingual, you know, so there was always this, like, emphasis on education and how important education is. So I was always kind of programmed to be in that way, and I was a huge nerd. Like, I loved learning so much. Like, my sister's older than me, and she would have her homework, and I would, like, peek at her homework and try to do her homework with her. And I'd be like, teach me. And she'd be like, shut up. Let me do my homework. And so I always just really like loved education. And so it was really never a question for me whether I was going to go to college or not. Like I never questioned it. My parents expected it. I expected it out of myself. So, you know, I was getting like good grades and everything. And then due to money, junior college was the best option, and I was also a little bit iffy about exactly what I wanted to do. And then in junior college, I was met with a lot of hurdles, like personal hurdles, and also like, so like basically hurdles with my mental health, hurdles with my physical health, And there was just a lot of things to navigate that I didn't even know that these would be struggles. You're in the real world all of a sudden. It's not just like this little high school that you went to. It's you're responsible for everything. And so, you know, I was navigating DSPS, which was like disability services all of a sudden, because I was met with a physical injury that I did not like expect. And, you know, it was just a lot of pushback, and I kept like pushing and trying. And then eventually, like, I transferred. And so for me, it was kind of the opposite. Like, I was always very like nerdy. And then all of a sudden, it was like I was losing motivation to go through with my classes, and I was losing motivation to like, because of all the pushback that I was facing internally and physically. So then it just became a thing of overcoming. And I recognized how much like certain centers and resources can make a difference in your journey of self-healing and of accomplishing your goals. So I just became very passionate about, hey, I know what it's like to be sidelined. I know what it's like to not know what you're doing. I know what it's like to be first gen. I know what it's like to have parents who have accents, and you know, you grow up like listening to them not be treated well in society, and then that just kind of messes with your head. And so then you become more like apt to knowing that other people have difficulties navigating certain systems, and you recognize that not everybody is inclusive. You recognize that not everyone is going to be understanding, and that just really makes you want to be that person and be like, hey, I know what it's like to be here. I had people to help me. I had centers to help me. Let me give back and be that person that helps bridge the gap and be like, hey, I understand where you're coming from, and I want to help you, and you can reach your goals.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that. And I think I hear a theme in what you've all said, and it leads us sort of into, we're going to skip a few of our questions and we'll kind of go around about the other way, but it leads us into the last question we had kind of talked about bringing up, because you all talked about different growth, evolutions and experiences you had around different types of trauma and personal experiences. So I know the CCLC has been doing some work for maybe what, about 3 or 4 years, really more intensely with the framework of healing-centered work. Mm-hmm. So can you all explain and share a little bit about what is healing-centered? Because I think a number of people might be hearing another phrase called trauma-informed or trauma-centered or whatever, but there is the other framework that you all are doing is healing-centered. So if you can share what is healing-centered, what is some of the work you're doing, how is it woven into what you're all doing and what you're seeing the results or the, you know, the impact of that it's having for you and the students around?
Sure. So really for when we talk about trauma-informed, and I think we all shared a little bit of like life happens to you, you know, and different things can hurt or wound or, you know, throw you off your game, you know, whether that's interpersonally or relationally, physically, so that everyone brings traumas. And many times in American society, you know, people of color experience these traumas disproportionately, like racism. That's a public health crisis. You know, it's a major trauma that people go through every day. And so, you know, so in a space for the CCLC where we highlight diversity, we highlight people of color, we have to have that understanding that many times, you know, society or circumstances have enacted trauma on us as individuals or as communities, right? So there can even be collective trauma. And a lot of times though, we tend to focus on that trauma. And the healing center approach says, yes, we acknowledge these traumas, we want to heal from these traumas, but we also want to highlight what's right with you. What have you done that in spite of all these things, these societal you know, blockages, you've managed to overcome these. You're here, you're a student, you've survived all these things that the world, that society, that systematic systems of oppression have created and enacted on you and your family. And, you know, so that's what we really, I think, bottom line, healing-centered is what is right with you. What have you done? What have you been able to accomplish despite all these things, how have you been resilient? Let's focus on not just on the traumas. We will. We're going to look at these things because we have to, right? We have to. We can't deny them. We know that their systematic oppression is a thing, you know, but what have you done in spite of that? What have you done right? And the way that the CCLC tries to focus on healing-centered viewpoints is by highlighting the student voices, the people who use the center, who are creating these programs for other students like themselves on campus, like Nidhi said, who are wanting to give back, right? Out of their wound comes knowledge, and out of that knowledge comes healing for others too, right? And in healing others, we heal ourselves. Even if that's just connecting you to a resource, even if that's connecting you to a space where you can find community and understanding, that is healing. I think in the most practical way, our diversity summits is kind of our big kind of healing-centered, trauma-informed event that we do in the spring semester, where we bring communities of people from, you know, all communities here on campus, diverse communities, and really talk about these things. Let's talk about healing-centered engagement and the things, the active things that you've gone through in your life, but that you've overcome and have defeated and are in the process of getting through, right? Because we don't see healing as an ongoing thing, but every day that you're successful, every day that you show up, every day that you say yes to yourself, and to your goals and to your future is a day that you're healing, and you're healing not only you, but potentially your community, right? And your future. So that's what it means to me. And that's what I think I've gotten from Crystal, right? This let's focus on what's not what's wrong with you only. Let's focus on what's right with you and how you're being successful.
Great. And Anna and Nidhi, as students in the center, what are you seeing or experiencing kind of getting from the healing-centered approach?
Would you like to go first, Anna?
Yeah. Okay. So, thank you. So for me, like, I don't know, I used to hear a lot of, like, trauma-informed, like, know what's going on, like, you know, what's wrong with people kind of thing, you know? And when I came to the CCLC, it was more like, okay, we're doing healing-centered work. We don't want to focus too much on, like, you know, what you're, we know that people go through things. We understand, kind of like what Yamila said, you know, as individuals, we each go through a different journey. We each kind of go through individual struggles. And we face challenges, especially as a first-gen student, especially as a low-income student or, you know, a person of color. You're facing these challenges. As you grow up as a kid, as a teenager, and now as a young adult or adult. So for me, healing-centered is just focusing on how can we move forward? How can we grow? How can we, you know, help each other grow as well? And it's awesome because we did an open forum just recently on, like, the pandemic and, like, transitioning back to campus. And it was about students voicing their opinions and what they went through. And it was healing-centered. And I facilitated the conversation, and it was just great to hear students' opinions and what their stories, and then just seeing, you know, like, how do we move forward? How do we grow? And what Yamile mentioned as well, you know, we're having a diversity summit in the spring, which is focused on healing-centered. So I'm just excited to see more events and students coming in and healing. And so,
No, that's wonderful. It's good to hear from your point of view, because you're being a student who works there, you're implementing some of it, but then you're also learning it, and then you're also utilizing it as a student as well. You get to do both.
Yeah.
Not that Yamile doesn't get to utilize it for her own personal growth every day she's around it, but then as a student, it can be a different experience, I guess.
Yeah, and as students, we're still growing as people, and being far from home, you know, some of us can be homesick, or we're dealing with things, growing up, being independent, dealing with bills, or just maybe roommate things, you know, things on top of things. And it's just good to come to spaces where we're growing and we're focusing on, you know, how do we get through this? You know, what our resiliency to me is, like, just the big word that comes to mind when I think about healing-centered. You know,
yeah. And we're never too old to continue to grow, to learn, to look at our past. What have we ignored? What have we done well? What do we need to address? Those kind of things are never too old. And if you ask my family, you know, I'm definitely need to be learning stuff every day. So it is. Nitty, did you want to add anything?
Yeah. So for me, healing centered really means that not only looking back, but also what do you see for yourself moving forward? Like what hope are you carrying for yourself? And also, I don't think that, you know, it means completely ignoring your past. That cannot work when you're healing. You have to sometimes revisit the past to heal. But also the road to healing is never straight. So there's going to be ups and downs, and just acknowledging the work that you've put in, acknowledging that you are still moving forward, even if like the bridge there is a little bit rickety, and just really celebrating and being proud of yourself with how you've overcome some of these things, because you may not be at the same point you were in the beginning of your healing journey, and it's just really important to celebrate that. So that's what healing-centered work means to me.
Great, thank you. Yeah, and for me, I'd never even heard of it. And then about 5 years ago, roughly, I would say about 5 or 6, I was at a conference, and probably one of the people you all use, Dr. Sean Jenright, his work, he was the presenter at the conference, and we got to do some radical healing activities during one of his sessions. But for me, it even resonated even more, because the whole activity and the whole session itself was all centered around using music and lyrics. And so if you haven't listened to the podcast or you don't know me, that's my main area of research and sort of passion of life is just music and lyrics. And I was cranking music right before this episode started, and I was going to just share my audio with you all as you came in the room, but then I was like, nah, that's a little bit loud. I don't know what kind of mood. They might not be in that mood for my music today. So I'm going to definitely in the show notes, I've already put a couple of links. So listeners will be able to get to the Praxis Project, which is also another huge organization doing healing-centered work out of Chicago in the K-12 system. And then I'll have a link to a video that another group in California put together on Dr. Sean Jenright's work. So those will both be in the show notes for sure for anyone who wants to check that out. We've talked a little bit, and I thank you, Yamile, for correcting my math, because I said 11 years, but I cut 4 years off the life of the whole CCLC.
I just know it's almost 15 because our anniversary is coming up. So I just stuck in my head. Yeah.
Yep. Thank you. The group that I was mentioning, the group is Youth REX or Youth Rex is a group that put together a good video with some work from moving from trauma-informed to healing-centered, kind of that process as well. So if you want to share anything else about the CCLC, who can use the CCLC?
Yeah, so the CCLC is for everyone. Anyone
exactly.
CCLC, we're actually a physical space. So we are in the diversity wing. So we're right across from the BMU in the Miriam Library Room 172. So we're right across from the MCGS office. We're in the same hallway as the Dream Center, the Past Scholar Center, and the Star Center. So just look for one of them and then you'll find us. We're open to anyone. We're a physical space. We have spaces where you can hang out. Use our computers, just chill with your friends, do your homework, all that kind of stuff. So it's open for anyone. It's open for anyone. Our big motto is that we're a space where people can be respected, connected, and affirmed. And that's really kind of what we try to do.
Yeah, I just want to add that. Oh, sorry.
No, I was hoping you were going to say something about the motto as you walk into the CCLC. That's what you get to see on the wall. And for me, it's an odd experience because I started working at Chico State 21 years ago with EOP, and the room that is where Yamile is sitting That was my office.
Oh, that's crazy.
That was my office for about 10 years before we moved over to the new student services building there. I actually also had one of the little cubicles when you walk by where you have storage stuff in now, basically.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of my offices first, actually, too.
Oh, weird.
So when I walk in, though, it's like always refreshing to see all the color and the quotes and all the inspiring stuff you all have up in there. So, and yeah, Nitty, sorry, if you want to add, please.
Oh, you're perfectly fine. I just wanted to say that, like, you know, even if you don't already have friends in the center, it's a great place to just come in and be connected. Everyone's really friendly. There's going to be people who are going to be, like, making an effort to get to know you. And if you're just tired between classes, you can also just take a nap on one of the couches. And it's just a really refreshing space to be in. It's very unique on campus. And I just think it's a great thing to check out wherever you are on that. On that scale, like whether you want to talk to someone or you're just like, no, I want to just like take a nap, like wherever you are over there, we're the center for you.
Yeah, I know I'm constantly referring students over with the courses that I get to teach. Some of the projects and things students do are personal reflections and writing about TED Talks or podcasts they listen to. And I give them certain prompts to consider connected to our readings and our videos and almost on a weekly basis, I would say for the first 6 or so weeks of the semester, students are writing about personal experiences that they say, well, you know, I haven't really shared this with anyone. And so I'm like, well, I feel this huge privilege and trust that they've already built and we've built with each other, that they're writing about very serious things in life that they're experiencing and they just don't know who to go to. Because like you mentioned, it's, you know, they're new to campus, they're new to Chico, or just they're new to talking about that situation as well for themselves. And so I think most of the times I refer people, hey, go over to the CCLC. Let's walk over. I'll show you where it's at if you're on campus, because there's so many people there with so many different shared experiences that if you hang out there enough, you're going to meet 1, 2, or 25 people who resonate and become part of your support community for different reasons.
Yeah, I think go ahead.
Yeah, and also I wanted to say that, you know, the CCLC is definitely a place where we have uncomfortable conversations. There's a lot of like healing in that. But we also can't guarantee like a safe space, but we can guarantee a brave space. So people talk about stuff and then there's definitely other resources for things that are more serious that we can refer you out to.
Yep. Thank you for that. Yep.
Yeah. And just to add to that too, I think, you know, Anna mentioned a lot of our students come from Southern California, the Bay Area, which are much more diverse communities. And so the CCLC is definitely a space where you can reconnect with that diversity. You know, you're going to see people that look like you and remind you of the people, your friends back home that maybe you don't see in your classes or you don't see in the BMU or you don't see in the dorms, but you're going to find that in the CCLC.
Excellent. Thank you. So let's see. Also, for listeners who aren't in Chico, you can visit the website on Chico State's homepage. You can go there. You can search for CCLC, mm-hmm. or you can just put it in the Chico State's webpage, and then just at the end of the address, put /CCLC.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can see some of the resources that are there, because you can utilize some of the information they have as well, whether it's for your personal growth or information, or for your community that you're in, you want to share with other people around you, or you're working in education somewhere, they have a lot of great resources there that you might be able to adapt to utilize with what you're trying to do in your efforts. So,
yeah, and also follow us on Instagram at Chico CCLC.
You can
also follow us on Facebook or Twitter. That's our social media, really is kind of where you get the most up-to-date information about our programming.
Okay.
Is that fair to say, Anna? Do you think that
I would say social media.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's always with the social media, right? It's what's happening. You know, you ask someone, hey, how can we connect? Hey, what's your Snap? You know, tell me your Snap. I'll connect with you. I'll hit you up. You know, there's no more. What's your email?
Oh, definitely not.
What's your email? I don't know. Do I have an email? I had a student the other day. I was just asking something. And he's like, I don't even know if I have an email, honestly. I said, are you being serious? He said, well, I know I have one. I just don't know how to get to it.
Oh, man.
Okay. So, So, you know, anyway, that's just, you know, the evolution of communication.
Oh, it's funny.
Right. Well, and this is off topic in a sense, but there, I was working with a professor who was here on campus even within the last 3 years or right before. They were still working before COVID came around. So it might've been 3 or 4 years that they've been gone, that they left about that time frame. But I went to meet him in their office and get some information. I said, okay, can we check this? And he said, how are we going to check it? And I said, we can just log in. He goes, log into what? And I said, no, seriously? And he said, yeah, I don't even have a computer.
What?
So there are some diehards and some people still just, you know, but what is it? 99.9%, you can say, of people nowadays, you know, especially in higher education, have some electronic communication. And
yeah, after last year in COVID, I don't know that you can escape not knowing what your email is, like,
tricky.
If you went to college.
Yeah. The student I was referring to was, because he's a first year, so he was kind of like, well, you know, thinking of Chico State email stuff, like he just didn't even ever get into it. He's so busy trying to just get everything else going. So anyway, all right. So unfortunately, we are waning in our amount of time that we have here. So we're going to head into our recommendations. Okay, Yamile, what do you have to share with listeners today?
Okay, so this first one blew my mind. It's a visual history of Chicano AX literature put out by a professor at UC Merced. One of the reasons why I studied British literature is because I didn't believe that Chicano literature went back very far, like it didn't have a long history. But someone has been doing the work. Our Latino, Latinx, Chicano literature is as old as 1610. And so I just was like so taken by this. And he's put out the work. It's an ongoing listserv. It's just really exciting to me as someone who didn't value their own history, the history of her people's literatures, even though literature and words were so important to me. So this just brings me a lot of joy and a lot of pride. So I definitely recommend that if you're into reading, into Chicano, Chicanics literature, Chicana literature in general. So I recommend that. The second thing, still love libraries so much. So I just wanted to give a shout out to the Research Commons in a Merriam Library first floor. It's open. A librarian there, Stephanie Baldalvia, told me about it just today, just a few hours ago. So I wanted to put in a plug for that for her. There's so many, I mean, I think students don't think about the library very much as a physical space, but there's people there who can help you do your research. You know, finals are going to be coming up, those papers are going to hit, and you don't have to suffer alone. Because there's help, physical help, a place where you can go on campus and get that research help that you need. Don't suffer. Go to the Research Commons. It is open now. Merriam Library, first floor. Ask for Stephanie. Tell them Yamile sent you.
And yes, it's open. My office is in the library, so I get to sit every day. And if you listen to the last episode, Stephanie was one of our guests.
There you go. It's a full circle.
Yeah. All right, Anna, what do you have to share today?
So I don't really have anything specific. I just kind of wanted to share what really helps me. Like, I think if you're listening to this, no matter what your background is, but for me, being like first gen and facing certain obstacles, I always forget to take care of myself. I always forget to put myself first. So just what kind of helps me, I love to cook. So I like cooking things that I ate when I was younger. I like cooking things that remind me of home, or just, you know, meals that I had ate when I was younger. And also just taking care of like my mental health, if that means saying no or asking for help or looking for a resource, or just watching a movie, going to the movie theaters right now. There's some pretty good movies, some scary movies if you're into that. Halloween Kills was an 8 out of 10 for me, but wow, you should still watch it. And I'm just a big like snacker, like popcorn and M&Ms and just like some sour candy in there. So just whatever works for you, but just take care of yourself and make sure that you take some time out of your schedule to put yourself first. But yeah.
Great. Thank you. That seems to be a common theme or recommendation over the past year from folks. It's good to keep hearing it, reminding people, bringing it up. Someone may not have heard it enough, and it's what they need now. So thank you very much. And it's all, like you said, it's all different ways of how you take care of yourself. Just because one person does it one way doesn't make it the right way or your way, but it's a way. And so find what's good for you. Thank you very much. All right, Nitty, you're going to take us home. What do you got for us today?
So I have a link to diversity resources. So basically there's organizations and clubs on campus. And I think someone's bound to resonate with them. There's like the Indian Student Association and like multiple Greek organizations as well that are multicultural. So I think definitely check that out. And then I'm a giant book nerd, so I like The Outsiders, and I'm recommending that you read it. It's a good read. I also did want to add that we have a student learning center on campus. And if you're struggling with any of your classes or just need extra guidance, the student learning center is an excellent resource. It's in the student services building on the third floor. So definitely check that out.
Wow. It's like you're all kind of psychic and in the future and the past. Because if you're listening to this episode, if you're listening now, one of our upcoming episodes is with some of the staff from the Student Learning Center at Chico State coming up. Yes, and I'm glad you mentioned the Indian Student Organization. About 3 weeks ago, my daughter and I, we got to go down to the ceremony for Ganesh put on by the student group, and we got to have some, oh my gosh, I'm going to butcher it now, I'm sure. Dang it. Oh, well, I'm not going to try. Oh,
some
lados. We got some lados. We got the, like, it's like the ladus. Dessert. It's a ladus.
Yeah.
Sorry, thank you. It's like a sugar ball with chickpeas and a little bit of curry thrown in.
Oh, there's no curry, but it's
they
wonderful.
Said theirs had, they said theirs had some curry, like sprinkled on it or something.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. Okay. It was interesting.
Okay. Yeah, that's it tastes so good.
It's
so.
Like a ball of sugar, right? Is that how you sum it up?
Yeah okay. Basically. So good. It's very wonderful. I'm glad you got to have that. Yes.
And then they also had some samosas.
Yes.
And then they had some pakota. Is that how you say it?
Pakora.
Sorry,
Yeah.
Yes. They had some of that. Oh, my gosh. So we got to sample all those. And we got to kind of, Sage and I got to be there and be able, so she got to kind of learn a little bit more about the story of Ganesh and why Ganesh has an elephant head. And it was really a cool ceremony. And they did some dancing and some prayers. And so, anyway, we also got henna tattoos, both of us. Got
yes.
Some.
No, I was there. It was definitely a lot of fun.
Oh,
I was
shoot.
Going to ask if you stayed for the dancing. So.
Yeah, we were there just for a little bit of that, and then we had to leave at that kind of like after about 5 minutes of that. So,
gotcha.
Yeah, we were there most of the time. Oh, shoot. Too bad we didn't see you there. All right. So, anyway, thank you again, all three of you, for being here. I don't even think I'm going to... You know what? I am going to throw in one recommendation for this one. It is from, we're talking about escaping to worlds and being bookie nerds and into that kind of stuff. And so Chris Colfer, anybody familiar, recognize that name? Oh, how do you recognize his name, Nitty?
Okay. I am like scared that I'm going to be wrong, but was he on Glee?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
He's
Glee,
one of the.
Right?
Yep. Okay. Yep. Hey. I butchered Pakora, and I, you know, hey, but you set me straight, so you know that's what counts. Thank you, because it's part of that. You know, I try, and if this is a good message for all people, if you're trying to learn a language or trying something new, you can't be afraid. You're going to get it wrong sometimes, but then when people help give you the right way, you got to remember to keep doing it that way. So.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, and I appreciated you trying. That actually meant a lot, and I was like, whoa, like he's trying.
I have a fascination with languages that aren't English. I love the sound, and I love trying to sound and be able to say it properly is fun for me. So
I appreciate that.
And so, yeah, you're welcome. So thank you. But Chris Colfer was one of the actors and singers on Glee. And then as he transitioned out of Glee and moved on, he was writing books. And so he has a whole series of books. He has a couple of series now, but one of them that my daughter got me into, and I think when she was in second or third grade, she read the whole series of 8 or 9 of these books that are like, you know, 400 or plus pages on them, but it's called Land of Stories. If you like to read, have you heard of these? Any of you heard of this one yet?
No. See,
oh, it is. It's a great series of stories, and how it sort of weaves all of these fictional fairy tales and folk tales and stories that have already have their own books, but all these characters are now living in this land of stories, basically, right? So they're all interacting together, and it has some great twists and turns of who's related to who and who's working with who. And anyway, it was a fun series to read along with her and learn through her eyes. So if you want to escape to a totally different land, that's a great series for you. All right. Well, again, thank you all, and listeners, thank you for tuning in, and we will talk with you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.